Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently.
They are not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. But the one thing you can't do is ignore them.
Yeah!
Because they change things. They push the human race forward.
You know it.
And while some people say they're crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
In April of 2011, Invisible Children released a video describing the Fourth Estate, a summer summit to be held in San Diego that would set the stage for the organization's progress in its fight against the Lord's Resistance Army and the use of child soldiers in Africa's longest-running war.
Others see what could be and what is waiting to be made. The time has come for a new estate. In August of 2011, we will come together to map out a new revolution. You will say it all started at the Fourth Estate, because it will.
Fast forward to August 4th, 2011, when 700 Invisible Children staff members, interns, roadies, and select dedicated supporters came together on the University of San Diego campus to learn about Invisible Children's programs, hear from leaders in the field of social justice around the world, and become an integral part of Invisible Children's goal and mission. Each person in the Shiley Theater radiated excitement as Jedediah Jenkins and Jason Russell took the stage to begin the Fourth Estate.
Thousands of people applied, and you guys are in this room. You know what was in that application. You know what it took to be here. And you're here. You were chosen, and you are known. You are worthy. And I'm wondering tonight if you realize that Invisible Children is not just a brand, it is not just a company or a charity, it is made up of all of us in this room. The people in this room are so powerful. If you remember in your application, you filled out all these questions, and one of them was, how much money have you raised for Invisible Children? And, you know, taking into account some of you are from the same school, blah, 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 we calculated it, and this room alone, you have raised over $3.2 million. We are in awe of you, and you are truly heroes to us, and we have done everything in our power to know you and to study who you are so that these 4 days can be the most formative of your life thus far. That's what we're doing. That's what the Fourth Estate is about. This whole weekend, the next 4 days, is very meticulously, painstakingly crafted for your experience. It's gonna go teetering between universal truths. We're gonna hear some of the most incredible speakers who are philosophizing, predicting, and prophesying what's next. And then we're gonna focus on very specific action, how we can see that idea writ large over humanity in specific ways. So when you hear that all men are created equal and that they deserve the protection and the chance to live, we're gonna say, well, we're gonna help bring that about because that is true. And the fact that it's not happened is unjust. Okay, that's what we're doing here. So, we've sculpted each session very, very deliberately. So you're just gonna have to trust us. That's why it doesn't say exactly who's doing what, blah, 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 blah. You're on a roller coaster that we have designed in the dark halls, and because we want it to just wash over you. You just enjoy it. You just show up and roll.
Members of the Fourth Estate were sorted into four tracks: connectors, creatives, cultivators, and captains. Each track focused on a distinct aspect of Invisible Children's work: movement, art, missions, and business, respectively. Although the goals for each track were diverse, they were each united by the conference's central mission.
Proving the universal through the specific. And that really, we'll go into that more and more, but it's really the universal truths are embedded on every man's heart. It is that all men, women, and children are equal. And we are going to prove that through specific actions and goals that all of us in this room are going to fulfill. We're going to commit to that and do it. That's what Invisible Children sets us apart. our special sauce, and you know it, is that we actually do it.
With this mission in mind, the Fourth Estate began, beginning with the specific. Invisible Children's full-time staff members treated attendees to an in-depth look at the organization's programs, initiatives, and results. Laren Poole, one of the founders of Invisible Children, gave an overview of the organization's evolution, starting with its original and governing intent of raising awareness about the war in northern Uganda and making the actions of Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army visible to the world.
That's what Invisible Children's about. We first did this by creating media, powerful media to bring stories back to home, back to the United States, to bring the war home. And we will always do this. This is in our DNA. This isn't going away. Then we graduated to giving you guys a single, simple thing you could do, whether sponsoring a kid, building a school. And then we graduated from charity to choice. We gave you the ability to buy products made by the victims of the LRA and allowing them the opportunity to rebuild their own life through commerce. But the reality of the situation is today, where the LRA is at in the world, we can't do any of this stuff. We can't make media fast enough to update you on the situation. The place is way too remote. We can't sponsor children. All the schools are shut down. That's how bad it is. We definitely can't make handbags or bracelets up there. The conflict is at large. And so we have to adapt.
This adaptation came in the form of the Protection Plan, which focuses in part on connecting remote communities in the Democratic Republic of Congo to an early warning FM radio network that will inform them of the LRA's movements. The radio networks are also used to encourage LRA abductees to defect from the Army's ranks.
We know from LRA abductees that escaped the LRA that they carry around little radios like this. We build FM stations in very, very remote communities and play Acholi music. We do know what music they like. We play music, Acholi music, and then we sneak in little messages from former abductees to tell them, look guys, if you come out, you're not going to be killed. You know, life outside the rebels is way better. And hopefully reach that voice of reason inside of some of these guys and get them to surrender. This thing right here is the best shot we have at stopping and degrading the LRA's capacity for violence. We used it in northern Uganda. It was extremely successful. It was the second most successful program in getting the LRA to surrender. And now, we're going to expand that into Bawele and Carr.
One of the most unique aspects of the Protection Plan is that it has been entirely funded and executed thus far by private citizens, active supporters who acknowledge their power to make a difference.
We have the ability to push the boundaries of what's possible with human aid, human empathy, and what private citizens can do when they don't stop it now, and they keep persevering.
Through presentations by the Invisible Children staff, Fourth Estaters gained a deeper understanding of the organization's campaigns and the motives that drive those campaigns. Adam Fink, Invisible Children's Director of Programs, spoke alongside Ugandan advocate Jolie Okot about the organization's efforts on the ground in northern Uganda and the Congo.
Local leadership is at the backbone of all of our programs. Local ownership is what allows these projects to succeed. And for those of us from other countries who can come in to bring our unique talents or expertise, it's only when those are combined with local solutions that our work becomes truly possible. And we can come away today confident in the answer that's clearly in front of us. It's stopping the perpetrators, protecting communities, and promoting recovery and lasting peace. Each of you are on the front lines of making that happen.
When Invisible Children started as a nonprofit, I felt like there's nothing else we could give these children apart from education. And that is why I carried a big vision for education. And that is why up to today, I stand as an advocate. For me, in the African culture, it was very challenging for a woman to stand up and, you know, pay the siblings in school. No matter what happens, when you grow up, you get married, and that is it. That is the end of the story. But for me, I said, no, I'll stand as an advocate for other children, and that is why today we do what we do at Invisible Children. We need to build future leaders. There is no way you will see a child who is abducted come back and you sit back and fold your hands. You have to do something. And the best you can do for them is provide for them an opportunity. If I wasn't given the second chance in life to go and study, I wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here. But because I got the education, I stood as a leader. And my leadership, I want to pull many more Ugandans. Today, as I talk, I am so proud seeing many girls going to school. I am so proud because of the support you gave me. I am strong enough to put over 1,000 kids in school, and that is what Invisible Children is doing today. I want to thank you so much. Let us continue. Let us hold our hands together, and then we change the world, because that is the best thing we can do. There's nothing much. I've never regretted being a humanitarian worker because I feel there are so many lives that have touched. What your heart is telling you today is what you should continue doing. Don't stop. Don't underestimate your strength. You have a strength. You have a story to tell.
Ben Kesey, CEO of Invisible Children, personally assured members that their donations and fundraising efforts are carefully distributed to the organization's life-saving campaigns.
We're asking a lot of you. We're asking you to consider to do something huge, that you have to invest your time, your talent, your identity. It takes a lot of courage to try to pursue the goals that we ask you to consider, okay? The only thing I can say is, number one, we're standing with you. And number two, I personally take the job of translating the resources that all of you have given us and entrusted us with. I take that job very seriously to implement it effectively. Okay? And to do the best possible job with the resources that we have to make change towards the mission that we've stated. And that is the commitment that I can make to you today. That if you decide and if you pledge, which I think you will, knowing all of you, to really continue to support Invisible Children and invest in it, the pledge that I make back is we're going to work just as hard, with as much intensity, with everything we got, from myself to our management team, to our staff, to the roadies, to the interns, everyone that's in our office in San Diego is standing with you and is working our butts off, okay, to translate that into effective work. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Joel and our management team in Uganda about 2 months ago. We sat down for 3 days, and we called it a management summit. It's the first time we've ever done this. Really come together and intentionally say, how are we going to embrace this next season of Invisible Children? And I got to tell you, the identity that we are moving into of remaining to be an emotionally driven organization that tells stories of individuals that need help, pairing that with the best practical team that we've ever had in place to implement the work, and the courage to go to the front lines of this conflict, it's creating an identity that I'm the most excited about. And we're going to be working really hard to translate that into the life change that all of you are shooting for with us as well. So the entirety of Invisible Children, like on behalf of myself and everyone here, I want to thank you for your efforts. I want to thank you for what you've already done. I want to thank you for what you're considering to do in the next 6 months.
Moving into the universal, the Fourth Estate featured keynote speakers from across the board of social justice, global activism, and even motivation. Sean Stevenson, a trained therapist and motivational speaker, kicked off the series of speeches by urging members to do away with insecurity and pursue their goals with confidence. He was followed by a group of speakers throughout the three-day conference whose ideas, stories, and words would educate, motivate, and inspire all 700 members of the Fourth Estate. As the conference continued, members heard from one of Invisible Children's founders, Jason Russell.
You ready? Get your pen out. The first lesson he taught me was you are more powerful than you think you are. You are more powerful than you think you are. You are. Number two, you have a song. You were born with a song inside of you. And it is your sole responsibility to know your song, love your song, and share your song with the world. The third thing he taught me, which is most likely the most valuable, was finish strong. Finish strong. Finish well.
Gary Haugen, president and CEO of International Justice Mission, spoke about his work.
And the thing that I think unites IJM and Invisible Children sort of at the heart is our very, very great desire to confront a very unique problem in the world, a unique form of suffering in the world, and that's the problem of violence. There's lots of forms of suffering in the world, right? People are hungry and sick and so forth. But then there are people who are suffering because of violence. And the thing about it is they're not suffering because of bad luck, right? Or because of a bad germ or bad weather. They're suffering because other people intend that they should suffer. Because there are perpetrators of injustice. The problem here is violence. And also the problem is they don't have an advocate. They don't have a voice. And thirdly, there was always this question that people were asking, well, you know, where's God in the midst of all that genocide? And the response I came to was, the problem is not asking where is God, the problem is where are God's people? Because this could have been stopped.
Shannon Sedgwick Davis, partner at the Bridgeway Foundation, told the story of a moment that changed her life as an activist.
I was standing in the middle of all of this chaos. The minder was trying to blockade our path. And as I was standing there, I felt a little girl next to my side. And I felt her shove something in my pocket. What she had shoved in my pocket was a little note. It was meticulously written. It described all of the horrors that those people were facing. And it was signed by the over 2,000 people living in that camp. You see, we went there hoping to start a revolution, and that little girl is the revolution. When I consider the gravity of that moment and so many other moments that I've been privy to in my life, I often ask myself, why me? Why is that little girl shoving that note in my pocket? Why am I standing on the front lines of some of these raging wars? Why have I seen such amazing moments of courageousness just to turn around and see these terrible moments of human despair? I'm the mother of two beautiful boys, and why do my beautiful boys get to live in such safety while other moms have to watch their children not? I can't imagine the thoughts that you all have had since arriving here at the Fourth Estate. I've been here throughout, and I have to tell you, I'm so incredibly proud of the work done by Invisible Children. These men were the very first to introduce me to the LRA, and they are brave young men and women now, and all of you are that are out there fighting this war. Even still, as I sit and listen to their stories, I want to encourage you guys not to imitate, but to innovate. Can you say that with me? Don't imitate, innovate. It's really important to me that you guys hear that. So I get an opportunity a lot of times where people will call me up and say, oh, Shannon, I really want to have coffee with you, and I want to learn more about what you're doing, and I just want to be you when I grow up. And I think that would be such a tragedy, because I want you all to be you when you grow up. And I came here believing that each one of you has a better answer. And frankly, I'm counting on it, and I'm looking forward to watching that unfold. I pray that today, if our short time together does nothing else, it beckons you to innovate, to play the unique role that you were created in all the world to play.
John Prendergast, co-author of The Enough Moment, Who Works with Enough, a project of the Center for American Progress, imparted his outlook on the problems of the African continent.
Why I'm optimistic, so optimistic about Africa and about human rights, goes to the core, the essence, even the heart of my life's work. And that is that Africa is full of amazing success stories that are mostly unknown. And the success, we don't know even this especially, the success is often linked directly to the actions that people like us in this room, right here in this room, take in defense of human.
Jeremy Rifkin, author of The Empathic Civilization, explained his theories on the progress of human civilization.
We take this for granted, but we are actually softwired to actually experience another's plight as if we are experiencing ourselves. But mirror neurons are just the beginning of a whole range of research going on in neuropsychology and brain research and in child development that suggests that we are actually softwired not for aggression and violence and self-interest and utilitarianism, that we are actually softwired for sociability, attachment, as John Bowlby might have said, affection, companionship, and that the first drive is the drive to actually belong. It's an empathic drive.
Shervin Pishavar, a member of the UN Foundation's Global Entrepreneurs Council and managing director of Menlo Ventures, invited members of the Fourth Estate to look toward the future.
Everything we do today, everything from this day forward, will define what the 22nd century will be about. So I'd like you to imagine what is the 22nd century and what is our legacy, your generation's legacy, for what we're going to build.
Finally, Tom Shadyac, Hollywood filmmaker and director turned global activist, shared his theories on human compassion.
Things that we are discovering over centuries that makes our organism work is love, compassion, kindness, connection, service, brotherhood, and sisterhood.
Another Fourth Estate speaker, Carl Wilkins, spoke to WRKC after the conference. Wilkins witnessed the Rwandan genocide of 1994 firsthand and was the only American to remain in Rwanda as the bloodshed continued. Over the course of 100 days, Hutu militias known as Interahamwe carried out the mass murder of an estimated 800,000 people. Wilkins, working with the Adventist Development and Relief Agency International at the time, decided to stay in Rwanda to protect people forced into hiding by the Interahamwe.
I think in some ways we had sort of made our decision before if it came to that. Number one, we were there with the humanitarian organization, and we felt like if the people ever needed help, this time of crisis would be the time they needed help. And right in our house were two young people, a young man and a young lady, and their ID cards said Tutsi. And so we just couldn't imagine leaving them there to be slaughtered. And the embassy had made it clear we couldn't bring any Rwandans in the evacuation convoy. So I would probably say the first immediate reason why Teresa and I made the decision that I stay was based on these two young people. On a larger scale, as I mentioned, we were there for humanitarian purposes, and if people needed help, now was the time. And on a kind of faith level, I just couldn't bring myself to say to my Rwandan friends, co-workers, you know, hey, we're leaving and I'll pray for you. It's not like I don't believe in prayer, but if God would be with them, why wouldn't God be with me?
As the genocide finally ended, Wilkins and other witnesses searched for ways to prevent history from repeating itself by raising awareness. Wilkins and his wife Teresa founded World Outside My Shoes to achieve this mission.
Well, World Outside My Shoes is, Teresa and I set it up with the goal of inspiring and equipping people to enter the world of the other. The more we looked at the genocide and what happened there, the more we came to believe that it's this concept of us, this us and them thinking, and then with us and them thinking usually comes thinking that says one group is better than another group, and then comes this idea, well, things would be better if we got rid of those guys. And while most of the time we're not talking about killing people when we say getting rid of them, but of course the genocide is where it goes to the extreme. In practical terms, the documentary Ghost of Rwanda on PBS, the frontline documentary by Greg Barker, tells the story of the Rwanda genocide. I have a few small parts in that documentary, and as teachers were using it, they just started Googling and finding me on the internet and asking me to come talk to their kids. And so on a practical level, that documentary had a big effect in getting us started in visiting schools. And then World Outside My Shoes, we started it to facilitate that work.
Wilkins became involved with Invisible Children after noticing similarities between their work and the mission of World Outside My Shoes.
Our work really does overlap in many ways. Two of the things that are most important to me are people recognizing the strength of a story, the strength of their own story, and the ability to share someone else's story. And then when you hear those stories, you know, they often change the way we think, which changes the way we feel, which changes the way we act. And so then we want to respond. And I really appreciate the way Invisible Children provides opportunities for people to respond. Their hearts are not only touched by the needs, but they give them concrete tools that can be used to address those needs, not only for the Child Soul Dream, but of course in the school-to-school programs and a lot of other initiatives. So I'm really, really excited to find ways that we can partner more with Invisible Children.
One of the most unique things about the Fourth Estate was the environment of inspiration and passion the members created. Although the speakers were there to motivate their audience, many speakers felt inspired by the members of the Fourth Estate themselves.
You inspire us. It made me hear that like so much as like a pep talk thing. You don't really maybe take it in. But your willingness to do something different encourages people who are out there fighting, but oftentimes just find discouragement. And so when you pack this place out with energy and passion, it just makes me want to go another round for sure.
This is the energy that changes the world. And I am so inspired to be here. It's a blessing and a gift to be here with you.
The energy of the Fourth Estate members was overwhelming. They are what made the Fourth Estate unlike any other conference. Discussions of social change and action over lunch or a game of apples to apples were commonplace. Students as young as 14 years old cheered and chanted for speakers like Jeremy Rifkin and paid rapt attention as he explained complex theories on empathy and human civilization. Each of them came with a story to tell and became a part of each other's stories over the course of the conference.
I saw The Rough Cut at my high school my sophomore year, and there was particularly one scene between two boys crying over a shared experience from the war. And when I saw them crying, it really put a face to the war for me, and I couldn't stop crying. Once I knew I had to do something. It was a physical response to my body, and I just knew this was going to be a lifelong goal for me.
It really started off when I watched the screening at my school, and I spoke with the roadies. It was just so easy to get involved because most people are like, oh, I really want to do something, but I really can't do anything. But it was just so accessible and so easy.
Why not do it? And then to see other people who agree with you and all unite with other people all the way across the globe, and then you're connecting with them too.
You know, why should we be doing something for these Ugandans when there's, you know, tragedy happening in the United States and all over? And it comes down to the fact that we are all human beings, and we are all connected by one thing, and that is we are human.
To be able to be part of something more than just me or my family, and to become a part of everything and change the world, or at least try to, is something that you would want to do. Like, that's why we're here, amen.
There's a part of Tony Jones where he's burying his mom, and that like really touched him with me because my mom's currently dying of Alzheimer's dementia. That was really hard for me because I was like, how many years, how many days is it gonna be until I'm burying my mom, until like I'm in that same situation? And I was like, we are all people. Like, we all go through sufferings, and you know, we all deserve a peace. We all deserve to know that there's something better out there. Deanna was our roadie. She's our Ugandan roadie. And I stayed after school to listen to her, and she said something she learned from Invisible Children is that nothing is impossible. And guys, ending this war is a possibility. Possibilities come from determination, so how determined are you to end this war?
These are the voices of the Fourth Estate. These are the compassionate, empathetic, driven young people who have set out to end Africa's longest-running war. Each of those voices has their own story. Each of them has a different experience, but they were united in August by their compassion for people thousands of miles away and their determination to see a 25-year-long war to an end. The Fourth Estate was established to equip these dedicated supporters with the tools and information to represent Invisible Children in their own communities. But in the end, it did much more than anyone could have anticipated. Members of the Fourth Estate formed instant connections with all 700 people, learning and growing together over the course of 3 days. They raised their voices together, and the sound of it was unbelievable.
We are invisible children. We are discontent. We hear discontent from every beginning. The rebels are coming. There are
those of us who are walking with purpose, exchanging the shallow aim of today for the promise to and of tomorrow.
I cannot aptly explain how it felt to be one of those voices, to be a gust of wind in the storm of change that is the Fourth Estate. Although the conference is over, its lessons remain in the minds and hearts of all those who attended. Words often fall short in explaining the experience, so now we must let our actions define us. We will keep moving forward and keep working to bring peace and prosperity to the people of Northern Uganda, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and all those affected by the injustice of this war. I am so honored to be one of the many voices of this movement. Words often fall short, but those are the words I have. For now. For 88.5 WRKC, I'm Sarah Cinto.